A Florida congresswoman shares her experience during yesterday's insurrection at the Capitol. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez.
Any legal way to get rid of this president is in the best interest of our country.
Congresswoman Lois Frankel spent hours locked in her office as the chaos unfolded. We'll hear about her experience and the vote to certify Joe Biden as the new president. Also, when the pandemic hit, it could have been reasonable to believe that some crime rates might decline. Sadly, human trafficking did not, and we'll find out why. And finally, are you staying healthy while working from home? It's a challenge, but we might give you some good ideas today. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. It's still difficult to look at the pictures and videos from yesterday as a pro-Trump mob led an assault on the U.S. Capitol. It was an act of domestic terrorism. Law enforcement was able to retake control of the building, and congressional leaders continued and finished the process of verifying the votes for President-elect Joe Biden. One of the people there was Congresswoman Lois Frankel, representing parts of West Palm Beach, Boynton Beach, and Delray Beach. We spoke with her earlier today. All right, Congresswoman, thank you again so much for your time. I appreciate it. Let's go ahead and begin. And I want to start by just asking you, I know this is difficult, but I want to take me back to what was happening yesterday. And how did you find out about the attack on the Capitol, and where did you end up going?
Okay. Well, first thing, I went to the floor of the House. I mean, it was a normal course of business. I went to the floor of the House. I was listening to the opening proceedings of the certification process. I was sitting in the gallery. We were allowed to socially distance, sit in the gallery, several members at a time. And I watched, you know, the Senate march in and so forth. And then more members started coming into the gallery. So I just felt uncomfortable just because of COVID. So I left the gallery, and then I was trying to figure out, should I go back to my office and wait to vote? Because it's not an impossible walk, but it's quite a walk to go back. So I decided I would just stop in. There was a lounge in the Capitol for the women members. So I decided just to wait there for the vote. And just about when I got in there, there was an alert. It said, it's shelter in place, shelter in place. Don't go near, don't go near the doors, don't go near the windows. And, basically, it was pretty scary. There was one other member in there, Grace Meng from New York. And, we kept getting the alerts. I had not been watching television, so I really had no idea what was going on.
Congresswoman, if I may, what's the protocol? Is there, because we haven't seen an attack like this since the War of 1812. So is there a protocol on, what does that mean, shelter in place? Is there a protocol on where they're supposed to take you, where you're supposed to go?
No, I mean, Grace and I, we were completely left to our own devices. We actually went into a room and we barricaded ourselves. We moved chairs, we barricaded the door, we shut all the lights, we barricaded the doors, and we stayed there for 5 hours.
You were in a closet.
Well, it was bigger than a closet. I mean, it was comfortable. I mean, it was a very, very small room, but I say this sort of kiddingly, she had cookies with her. I mean, it was the craziest thing. We kept very quiet. We had a TV, but we didn't put the sound on. And truthfully, I was getting most of my information from friends who were texting me. We're able to contact our staff. We said, tell the Capitol Police where we are. And they showed up, but it wasn't till about 6:30 at night. So we got in about, I think about 1:30 we were there, from 1:30 to 6:30.
So after all of that, you still had to go to the floor. There still had to, you still had to go through the proceedings. And I wanted to go to that and ask you about the fact that some members of the Florida congressional delegation voted to overturn the votes of some states. You have Representative Brian Mass, Mario Diaz-Balart, and Carlos Jimenez. I wondered, what do you make of that, considering what happened, that they still went through with that?
You know, I don't like to get personal, you know. First, of course, I disagree with their vote. I mean, it's pretty clear that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris won this election. I mean, there were something like 60 lawsuits filed by the president or his supporters, and judges all over the country, election officials, both Republicans and Democrats, all over the country, even the president's own attorney general, Homeland Security. I mean, everybody has said that this turned out to be one of the most secure elections and that there was no evidence of fraud. In fact, I would say the only fraud in this election is what the president is perpetrating on his followers. Because what happened is this president has basically been able to mesmerize millions of people in this country in believing that the election was stolen from him. And that this is a reality. And I do what I see with my Republican colleagues, and I'm not going to call them out by name. I mean, there were, you know, over 100 of them that I voted incorrectly, in my opinion. But what they are reacting to is, I think, fear of reprisal from their own constituents, because they know better. I can understand how a layperson who, you know, does not follow day by day politics or understands the democratic process like the way that members of Congress should and do, that when their choice for president tells them that the election's been stolen, and we know that the president has a lot of followers. So even though I can say it's crazy, how can people think that way? But the fact is, this president has been able to perpetrate this fraud on millions of people. But the members of Congress know better. There's no question in my mind that they know better, but they are afraid of the political consequences of going against the president. That's what it boils down to.
There has been talk about invoking the 25th Amendment. Do you believe or support that?
I believe any legal way to get rid of this president as quickly as possible is in the best interest of our country. Because I think yesterday is an example of how dangerous, or I should say more dangerous, he has become. I will be very worried the next 2 weeks what this man can and will do.
Well, you think about the fact that you have a large contingency of Trump supporters in Palm Beach County, you know, including the Proud Boys group that helped organize the rally yesterday. Is there concern about domestic terrorism and domestic threats in South Florida?
Well, I think everybody should be on high alert these next 2 weeks. And then, of course, President Trump is not going away. Guess what? The winners are Palm Beach County, right? Because he's coming home and going to be making this his place of residence, at least during the winter. And then I think he'll be going to New Jersey again. So listen, I think everybody has to be on alert. And, you know, with all this said, I am still have great optimism, because in 2 weeks, if we can get through these 2 weeks, we have a very, very decent, smart, man who will be vice president. That's the president-elect Biden, and a really terrific, energetic, smart new vice president, Kamala Harris, with a democratically controlled House and Senate, and we can get this country back moving forward, get this,
Let me stop you there, because you still have there was a tone of concern there. What can happen over the next 2 weeks? What's going to happen with security around the Capitol? What's going to happen with security for that transfer of power during inauguration?
It's my understanding that, you know, even as we speak, there is starting to be a review, and there will be a review of what happened. I'm getting my information secondhand. I was able to put cable news on this morning, but I saw on the news that there will be hundreds of reinforcement at the Capitol at least the next 30 days. So, you know, I'm hopeful that there'll be a very quick correction. I know that Congress is going to ask a lot of questions.
So, I mean, that's preparing for the next couple of weeks. Why wasn't that security in place yesterday?
Listen, I was shocked. I was stunned. I couldn't believe what was happening. As I said, I had my TV on without the sound. I forgot about closed caption because I don't use it. But if I didn't see, you know, recognize the U.S. Capitol and some Trump signs, I would have thought I was watching what was happening in a third world country. I really am shocked. We were literally, not just the members were left to our own devices, but, you know, we have staff there. Thank goodness that we did not have a lot of staff there because of COVID. And thank goodness the mob did not seem to have weapons, you know, firearms with them. Because could you imagine if somebody had come in with a firearm? They were not being stopped. It would have been horrendous. I mean, it would have just been an unbelievable carnage.
It could have been a lot worse. We are very lucky in that sense. Congresswoman, let me end with this. You said it a moment ago. Once the transfer of power is complete, Democrats have the White House, the House, and the Senate. What do you see as the priority? What do you think you can accomplish in the next 2 years?
Well, again, I think the number one priority is going to be getting COVID under control, getting rid of it, getting vaccines out to everyone who wants it and who's eligible medically for it, getting to get more financial relief to so many people who are hurting out there still, small businesses, people who can't pay their rent and their mortgage, they're not able to get food. I mean, there's still a lot of financial hardship out there, still people, they're out of work. So I think just tackling all the issues of COVID, that has to be first priority. But keep in mind, we can do more than one thing at the same time. And I would say the social justice issues and climate change are high priorities for me. Working with the Democratic Women's Caucus, we have a number of issues that are especially important for the advancement of women and girls, and we will be pushing that. We've got to, for example, get funding back to Planned Parenthood, who because they do so many wellness checks for both men and women across this country. So there's a lot of work to do. I can't wait to get the attention off of members of Congress and our safety. That is not the last thing that I wanted us to be talking about. But I am optimistic that we're going to have a great team and that much better days are ahead.
That was Congresswoman Lois Franco representing West Palm Beach, Boynton Beach, and Delray Beach. Well, still to come, South Florida was a hub for sex trafficking long before COVID. How has the pandemic changed things? Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. 2020 was a tough year for nonprofits that provide services for all kinds of issues, even as the demand for those services skyrocketed. That doesn't mean these groups have stopped doing important work. The Children's Trust of Miami-Dade named one particular program as the program of the year for all that it's done to help children facing the reality of human trafficking. Joining us now are the two people connected to that work. The program is called Project Gold. It's run by the Miami-based nonprofit Christie House. Amanda Altman is CEO of Christie House. Amanda, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Definitely. And also joining us is Marta Martinez, who's the director of Project Gold. Marta, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be part of the show.
I wanted to ask both of you just to start off, because we talk about human trafficking a lot. We've talked about it for years, but how do you describe it, and how in the world is it still happening in this age of interconnectedness through technology? I mean, it feels like we've been fighting this forever, but, you know, Amanda, I'll start with you. I mean, what is human trafficking today?
Well, the interconnectedness actually makes the society more conducive to human trafficking and to issues regarding sexual violence and sexual assault. The FBI has released a statistic that 1 in 5 children who log in on electronic devices will be sexually solicited. And so in the environment we're living in today with the pandemic and with technology, it's making it more conducive to sex trafficking.
So it's all of this social media is actually making it worse.
Yes, exactly. And we see clients who have been solicited via social media. In fact, one of our more outspoken clients was solicited via Facebook, was online talking to somebody who he thought was a woman, and turned out when he actually met up with that person, it was a male, and he was sexually assaulted by that person. And so we see it all too often. And right now we know that everybody's online even more these days and using technology even more because of the pandemic. And so that's just making the problem worse.
Marta, what about you? It seems like, again, I recall, you know, reporting on this issue over the last 15 years. Are we making any ground on this?
Oh, we're definitely making a lot of grounds on it, I think, especially here in Miami-Dade County. And with the program, we have a very collaborative process here, that we're very proud of, where we work with, a lot of our multidisciplinary team partners. We work with the Department of Children and Families. We work with the state attorney's office as well, very closely with FBI, with law enforcement, with Miami-Dade County Public School Systems. And everybody works together just to make sure that these cases are not slipping through the cracks, and that they're being offered the most comprehensive services.
There's also a lot more awareness. So things like your show are bringing a lot of awareness to the issue, whereas 15 years ago, when maybe people first started talking about it, and when we started Project Gold, actually, in 2007, nobody was talking about this. Yeah. Now people are talking about it, and that helps make a difference.
Let's start by understanding, what is Project Gold? Marta, how do you describe this?
So Project Gold, it actually stands for Girls Owning Their Lives and Dreams. And we operate, it's a program, that is part of Christie House, which Christie House is the Child Advocacy Center for Miami-Dade County. And Project Gold operates a drop-in center, which we were actually the first drop-in center in the state of Florida. And we work with girls between the age of 11 to 18 that have actually been verified victims of sex trafficking or at risk for sex trafficking. And here at the drop-in center, we do provide comprehensive services for them. And the drop-in center model really operates as what it sounds, a drop-in center where they can come in at any time if they just want to have a bite to eat, as well as just receive their comprehensive services if they need a shower, if they need hygiene products. It's really unconditional support in a very loving environment that's provided for them.
So you're not reaching out to them. You're basically a place like, look, we're here for you. No judgment. We'll help you any way we can.
Absolutely. But it is a program where we do receive referrals. It is a program within here, Miami-Dade County. About 95% of the girls that are part of this program are girls that are, you know, domestic here from the United States. So this is not, you know, this is happening in our community. These are our community children. And it is, you know, again, they have to, there's qualifications, obviously, to become part of the program. And it is girls that are either at risk for sex trafficking or are verified victims of sex trafficking.
Yeah. How does the Christie House, Amanda, then play a role in this? How was the connection?
Sure. Christie House is, as Marta said, Miami-Dade County's nationally accredited children's advocacy center. And so we heal and empower children who have been victims of trauma, primarily the trauma of sexual assault. And about, 13 years ago, almost 14 years ago now, we recognized that there was this increase in sex trafficking and that this population of children was not being properly served. And so Christie House decided to start this program.
And Amanda, is there anything that makes the reality of human trafficking different in South Florida compared to anywhere else in the country?
Well, first of all, in South Florida, unfortunately, Florida is number 3 in the nation for reported incidents of sex trafficking, and Miami-Dade County is number 1 in the state of Florida, not something you want to be number 1 in. But a lot of that is because we have a very large migrant population here. We have a transient population here as well. And so it's a little bit easier for people to traffic in girls or children without it being noticed. We also have a very large labor trafficking issue in South Florida, in large part because of our migrant population. So I think that those things make it unique. Also, cultures, we're so culturally diverse in South Florida, which is such a wonderful thing. But in a lot of cultures, these types of things are really shoved under the rug. People don't want to talk about them. They don't even want to talk about them as happening. I also think there's a really big, just in general, a stigma that people think, you know, we think of the movie Taken with Liam Neeson, where girls are in foreign countries and kidnapped. And this is something that happens across the pond. But it's something, as Marta said, it's happening right here in our own backyard. And it's not... it's not where girls are being kidnapped. They're being groomed for this.
And the other thing too is yeah, because sometimes there's that idea that, oh, it's just, we're talking about foreigners. We're talking about foreign girls and boys that are brought in or lured in from another country. But what percentage do we know are actually children domestic?
It's very difficult to actually have actual statistics, on trafficking. The best place that we are able to acquire statistics is from Polaris, which is the National Human Trafficking hotline. But here, at least within our program, you know, again, we get a majority of the referrals of children, you know, that have been identified as trafficking victims. And currently right now we have 60 girls that are members of our program. And again, all of them are domestic, you know, currently. And as I said previously, 95% of the girls that we serve all across Miami-Dade County are domestic.
Again, I'm talking with Marta Martinez, who is the director of Project Gold, and Amanda Altman, CEO of Christie House. The two help run Project Gold, which helps children facing the reality of human trafficking. It was ranked as the top nonprofit program in 2020 by the Children's Trust of Miami-Dade County. Continuing on this issue of how human trafficking has been impacted by the pandemic, I think there was an assumption by some that the pandemic might slow things down, but in this case, not so much. And social media has kind of boosted it. Amanda, coming back to something you said a little while ago, I want to get a sense of what do we know about how these folks, and I even want to know who these folks are using social media today to lure people.
Well, as we know, so many people are on social media these days, and even more so with the pandemic, because people want to feel connected and you can't do that in person. So we do it via social media. I mean, I do it myself. And, you know, everybody is traffickers are always looking for vulnerable people or the vulnerabilities in people. And right now, people, especially children, are very vulnerable because there's so much isolation going on. There's so much stress. I mean, think about parents and all of the stress that they're under and the economic stressors that are going on right now. And people are able to prey on that. I mean, there are predators out there that get on social media. And it's really, somebody asked me the other day if it, you know, about being group settings, et cetera, but it's really one-on-one individuals. So you're on social media and you think you're talking to somebody and really you're talking to somebody entirely different. You don't know who you're talking to. And it's really, really scary, especially for children.
Are they? You know, they get,
oh, go ahead.
These perpetrators, they're targeting certain people though, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, they're always looking for vulnerable people. So people who maybe have a home life that isn't stable, people who live in, you know, kids who are in foster care, kids who are in single parent homes. They're always looking for vulnerable people. And unfortunately, sometimes they're using other children or other people to identify those people. So we've seen it before where, you know, there's a trafficker and then the trafficker brings in people and then uses those people to recruit others. And so, you know, they rely on the people who they've recruited to recruit more people for them and identify vulnerable children.
How do schools play a role in this? I mean, how do you use schools or work with schools to try to battle this?
Sure. So we work really closely, especially with Miami-Dade County Public Schools, number one for education. So we go into the schools, we do all kinds of training courses. We do it both for the students, also for the teachers, the counselors. Even we train the Miami-Dade County School Police officers so that they can be trained in trauma and in dealing with these kinds of issues. So it's really important. Also, just in these times, it's important for the school to be able to have, you know, phone numbers and things available so that children and parents know who to call. So I know the school systems do provide on their website. And even during like Zoom classes, they will provide phone numbers that kids or parents can call. It's incredibly important from an education and outreach perspective to work with the schools.
Martha, I just thinking about that, I'm wondering, well, for a while now, we've had a lot of students not in class. So teachers aren't looking over them or they're not there with them. That must have been, that's got to be hurting.
It's very difficult, you know, at least with a lot of, you know, the minors that we work with and when they come into the program, you know, a lot of referrals and identification also does come from school systems and guidance counselors and teachers as education has been increased so that they can see the red flags. And so a lot of these kids, you know, are stuck in these home environments that are abusive or now they're sitting at home alone. And they are, you know, online a lot. And so unfortunately, you know, they are being, you know, targeted online for these reasons.
And you talk about red flags. I heard Amanda say that. Let me understand what some of the red flags are. What should we be looking for? Amanda,
you know,
I'll start
so
with
as
you.
Amanda said, you know, that there are a lot of vulnerabilities, you know, that traffickers go and they look for vulnerabilities to exploit. You know, in children. So, you know, sometimes moms that are working, you know, outside of the home, the children are alone a lot. When teachers start to see that children are becoming truant frequently, you know, or anybody, you know, knows a child and they're starting to hear that this child is skipping school a lot. And so when you find out that this is happening and you're asking questions and there's very vague responses or, you know, they're very reluctant to say where they are, where they've been, you know, that definitely is a red flag. And I think also sometimes when you're seeing children, you know, showing up with items, you know, and it's items that are unaccounted for, you don't know where these items are coming from. Now, all of a sudden, they have a cell phone and they're, you know, they're getting calls on this cell phone and they're not disclosing who they're speaking to. They're out at different hours of the night. They have, you know, different friends groups that they're circling around that they typically weren't around before, any kind of drug use. So there's a lot of different, you know, types of red flags that we definitely try to educate the community as well as the school system to assist us in identifying and helping to identify these kids before they really fall into a life of exploitation.
I need to talk about and ask both of you about the fact that, again, living through this pandemic, it has been very trying for nonprofits, for communities, for businesses, basically money. And I'm wondering right now how this pandemic has impacted the Christie House, how it's impacted Project Gold, and how are you doing? Amanda, let me start with you.
Sure. Well, we've been very fortunate to have some wonderful supporters, great funders who have been very understanding, have allowed us, you know, very often when we get funding, it's restricted funds. And so they can only be used for certain things. We've been fortunate that people have relaxed some of their rules so that we've been able to use the funds where we need them. We have not missed a single day of services at Christie House and at Project Gold. I'm so incredibly proud of that. And so we are fortunate, but yes, we are seeing a decline in individual and corporate donations right now. We've also had to cancel special events where we get a lot of our revenue. So for example, we do a gala and a luncheon every year. We were able to get our gala in 2020. It was actually our 25th anniversary celebration, but we had a luncheon scheduled for May, and we had to postpone that. We ended up doing a virtual luncheon that was very successful, but certainly didn't bring in as much revenue as we would if we were in person. So, you know, we're definitely feeling a little bit of a loss right now, but I'm just so incredibly proud that we have not missed a day of serving our clients. We have not had to let go a single staff member or furlough anybody. And so we are still a force in the community, and we are not going anywhere.
Again, an issue that is still there, something that has not gone away, though we are making progress, as Amanda and Marta have told us, but something to look for. Please, if you didn't hear it all, go back and listen to the show later and think about the red flags that they pointed out, things to look for, whether you're a teacher or parent, things that you need to know about what your kids are doing. Amanda Altman, again, CEO of Christie House, Marta Martinez, Director of Project Gold. Amanda, Marta, thank you so much for the insight.
Thank you. Thank you for having us and for shedding light on this really important topic.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Still to come, we're going to shift gears a little bit here. We're talking about the pandemic, and it's kind of forced us to stay at home in quarantine. So how are you staying active? We're going to get a few tips from an athletic trainer. Call in now, 800-743-9576. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Gyms, pools, basketball courts. These are the spaces where we get our physical exercise, and they've been closed or restricted for months because of the pandemic. And as the number of coronavirus cases hit an all-time high in the Sunshine State yesterday, public health experts are calling on everyone to limit their interactions with others. So how do we stay fit while we're stuck at home? Dr. Keisha Harriel is a clinical professor, athletic trainer, and exercise physiologist at the University of Miami, and she joins us now. Keisha, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hello. How are you?
Great to have you. And by the way, we're just asking, throwing this question out there, how are you staying physically fit during this time? What are you doing? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. Again, that's 800-743-9576, or find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Let us know what you're doing, how you've tried to stay in shape. I got to admit, it has been very difficult for me, Keisha. Mm-hmm. When lockdown first started in March and the gyms were closed, what went through your mind about, oh my gosh, what's going to happen now and for physical fitness for everybody?
Yeah, no, definitely. I know we all pick the exercises and activities to do that we really like. And for most of us, that's going out to a gym or doing something social with other people. And so originally I thought, look, what's going to happen now that people don't have gyms? Are they going to, everyone can't, you know, afford to bring expensive gym equipment into their home. So I was curious as to what the outlet would be for others who were looking to stay fit and healthy, but not being able to get to the gym or to their favorite space or be around their favorite group of people to play basketball or whatever. So it has taken a lot of people being very creative and very intentional to make sure that they stay physically fit.
How did it disrupt your, you know, fitness routine?
Yeah, so let me, I'm a clinical professor and athletic trainer, not a personal trainer, but an athletic trainer who usually deals with patients and clients to make sure that they're staying safe and healthy, and I focus more on sports medicine. And so for me, I like to think of myself not as a personal trainer, but as a regular person who, even though I have a background in exercise physiology and know the right things, I had the same challenges as our listeners and everyone else here today. And so it was very difficult. And I think that for me, even knowing what to do, it took a lot of intention and really stopping and being intentional about moving more. So for me, I had to think about how my world was changed and how I'm in the house. And I had to start to look at things differently. I have a really long hallway. What can I do in that hallway? How can I get out on that patio? And I may not be able to jog, but I could do lunges down my patio. So it really forced me to get creative. But also it's very difficult, a lot easier to curl up and binge watch TV when you're in the house.
Yes, I think I can attest to that as well, which is not useful to me, but fun, but not useful. Again, talking about how to stay fit during this time when, you know, we're quarantining or we're stuck in the house a lot more. Maybe you're going back to the gym, maybe you didn't, but maybe you found a way to exercise. What is it? We'd love to hear your story. 800-743-9576. Again, 800-743-WLRN. Or find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. Maybe you're doing desk yoga. I don't know if that's a thing. I just made that up. But you invented something. You're keeping fit somehow. We want to know what it is. What are you hearing, Keisha, from your clients, though, about the challenges? Or are you seeing as many clients? Because maybe people have just said, you know what, I'm not exercising as much right now.
Well, actually, I'm seeing a lot more people and getting a lot more inquiries about neck pain and back pain and shoulder injuries and elbow injuries. And a lot of it's dealing with posture and sitting all day. And so a lot of us have been forced to work at home, and we may not have that fancy desk or fancy chair that we have in our office. Or maybe our kids are in our office and now we're forced to sit on the couch, or we want to even work from bed. So I think I've been getting a lot of calls about I have this back pain that I haven't had before, or neck pain, and even elbow and wrist injury. So I really want to make sure that people recognize that if your back hurt or your neck hurts, you're definitely not going to work out. So really paying attention to your posture, especially if you're at home working, sitting all day, is just as important. And it's going to help you work out because you're going to feel good if your neck and back don't hurt. So I've been seeing a lot of issues with and just because necks and backs, and because people aren't as active, maybe their hamstrings are a little tighter. They're sitting in a chair for 8 hours or 12 hours and not getting up to stretch or take breaks. So definitely the type of injury that I'm seeing is changing a little bit from our normal sprains and strains to our more chronic things that have to do with posture.
I did notice that there's still a lot of people running, and a lot of people, mm-hmm. I mean, at least where I'm living, I see a lot of people biking and in big groups. And so, of course, they're not wearing masks. And I'm wondering, like, safety and etiquette when you're running or biking in big groups. Like, okay, you're exercising, that's great, but at the same time, that's kind of risky, right?
Yeah, I think everything you have to weigh the risk. We know when you're outside, the risk becomes less. But the closer you get to people, the more that you're actually breathing and in close proximity to someone, those risks increase. However, outside does make those activities a lot better than running or biking in large groups indoors. So what I would still say, it's important to move. We want to weigh the risk of what we're doing, but you also want to stay safe. And when you can wear your mask, wear your mask. A lot of people who run hear that and they say, no way. But if you're doing moderate walking or if you're doing a certain activity, and I've seen people in the gym with the mask on and they're completely fine. But everyone has to kind of make that risk assessment for themselves. But definitely being outside is very helpful.
Again, talking with Dr. Keisha Harriel, clinical professor and athletic trainer at the University of Miami. And talking about staying fit during this quarantine, a lot of people are out. But I mean, again, how do we do this? And maybe you're going to the gym if you are, what do you see? Are there a lot of people back at the gym? Do you feel safe? Or maybe you're exercising in the big groups. How are you doing it? Staying safe? Maybe you're staying inside. How are you staying in shape if you're doing that? 800-743-9576. Let's go to the phones. I want to go to Sean in Lake Worth. Sean, how are you doing it, man? What are you doing?
Hi there. I did sign up for a gym membership, but unfortunately I've only been able to go once because there was nobody wearing a mask in the gym.
What
I wanted to comment specifically is I found that my biggest success has been beginning with a fast 3 days, and then from that, like, starting at a low calorie point, controlling my diet from there on out is the most control I have about keeping myself fit. That's all I was going to comment.
Yeah, no, I mean, you have a lot more control over diet because you are at home. I'm finding this challenging also because I can just keep going back to the refrigerator. But but you know what? The other thing, though, is this is, as Keisha was saying, it's like you're also stuck inside a lot. How are you overcoming those issues of sitting a lot or at least moving?
Well, so as far as movement goes, I do work. I work in a construction company and I'm an operations manager. So I have to go to the office and everything wearing the mask all the time. So as far as I get the base, I'm not in an apartment in a big city where I'm stuck in my apartment every day, moving around. When you're sitting in your chair, focusing on like your abs being activated, when you're walking, doing kind of like intentional movement, I feel for the most part keeps me my basic physical level where it needs to be. And that as long as I control my diet, then it almost is enough. So that's one of my points there.
Well, Sean, thank you so much. Good to hear that you are doing the best you can. Good advice on the diet. I got to watch that as well. Again, the number 800-743-9576. Keisha, you know, one of the other things we have to remember too is that the exercise is not just good physically, it's good for mental health, right?
Absolutely. There's so many benefits to exercising. I have a good colleague who always says that exercise is the best medicine you could get for a lot of different things. So we know exercise helps with mental health and depression. We know it helps you to sleep better. It helps with memory, balance, and chronic diseases. So definitely, if anything we could do to motivate ourselves to move more and get that physical activity in, there's going to be a lot more benefits other than just the physical fit or cosmetic ones as well.
All right. Again, 800-743-9576. Let's go to Southwest Ranches. Rose. Rose, welcome to the program.
Hi, Rose. How are you? Good.
Rose, you had a gym membership, right?
Yes, $97 a month.
Ooh, okay. Are you doing it?
Yes.
Doing it?
No, I canceled it because it was a family membership, and I'm high risk, autoimmune and everything. I am a runner, but I cannot run, as your doctor said, I cannot run in a mask. So I decided to get a Nordic track. It's very expensive, but the payment was around $81 a month for 2.5 years, and we four of us use it. So I basically said I'm going to substitute my gym membership for Nordic track so I can run inside on the treadmill. And everything else you can do, you know, sit-ups, everything else without. And it's fun for everyone. You know, they have the screen. So that's what I did.
Yeah, so you found a substitute for it. And you find, are you active? Are you doing it?
Yes, I am an avid runner. I'm a marathon runner, believe it or not, but I cannot run outside in a mask. But when every other day I walk, and I walk with my mask, but running distance in a mask is very hard. And there are people out there doing it without a mask, and I just can't take the risk. So when I do run, I do it on the treadmill inside.
All right. Well, Rose, inspiring us all. It's possible. You just have to find the substitute. Rose, keep on running.
Thank you. And thank you again. Happy New Year. And thank you for your program.
All right. Happy New Year to you as well. Let's go back to the phones. I've got Ted in Miami. Ted, you're still going to the gym, right?
I am. When COVID first came, they shut down the gym. It's, I don't know if you could say it, but LA Fitness, and they did reopen. Mm-hmm. And people do wear masks, and they do have a lot of opportunity to wipe down the equipment. I can only tell you that I missed it. I've only been able to go once a week because I have kids and the job, but it's better than nothing, and I really do notice the difference if I don't go.
Yeah.
So I was very grateful that they have been able to stay open, and I can't comment for other gyms, but I do want to give a shout out to that gym, and that's my gym, and I do not work for them. I work for the hospital. But
do you feel, Ted, do you feel safe?
I do. I bring my own towel. A lot's changed. I mean, you can't use the steam room, can't use the pool. They have the locker space there, and it is different. But I feel safe.
Now, Ted, let me point out, you just said you work for a hospital, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you're put at risk quite often, and you're saying that you feel safe in the gym.
Well, again, even at the hospital, I mean, we're taking our temperatures before we enter work. We wear a mask. I don't work directly with the COVID patients, but right. You know, the hospital does take precautions. I think, you know, again, not everybody's not perfect, but I have felt safe. I do believe that you know, it can be done. You know, it's just a question of, to close everything because you say it's not safe may be extreme. There's got to be a middle ground there.
Okay. And by the way, I'm just asking, but since you work at the hospital, did you already get the vaccination?
It was offered. There was some confusion for me because I have a food allergy, and the initial recommendation was not to do the vaccine with food allergy. They have since amended that, and they will watch you for 30 minutes if you have it. I'm scheduled for the vaccine on the 14th. But there was, for me, there was some confusion due to the food allergy.
Okay. Well, listen, I mean, Ted, if you feel comfortable, you feel confident, and you know that it's safe enough for you. That's an interesting point. And again, you work at a hospital, so everybody's
Depends on the gym. Yeah. And I agree with the other caller. If I walked in one day and people weren't wearing masks and nobody cared, but when I have been there, I wear a mask, and I do see everyone around me wearing a mask, and I do see everyone taking the time to wipe down the equipment. So I do believe it can be gym specific. It depends on where you go.
Gotcha. All right. Thank you. Thank you for the insight. Let me get one more caller in here. I got Lori. Lori, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Lewis. Enjoy your program. I love listening to you. You've got a wonderful voice.
Well, thank you. Now, let me get this right. You have an exercise group you formed.
We formed a group that we all belong to the same gym, but during the pandemic at the very beginning, we quit because it was too dangerous.
Yeah.
So we have a group that we exercise outside, and it varies from 3 or 4 people to up to 10. And we socially distance, and some of the neighbors complain, saying, "Sweaty old ladies in the street are ruining our property."
Oh, my gosh. Holy cow. That is okay. Well, here's the thing, though. You know, I'm wondering if, you know, anybody has had the vaccination, or how do you stay safe? Do you get tested regularly?
I have been tested 3 times. I am going to be 72 on my next birthday, which is in a couple of weeks. So I definitely qualify for the vaccination, being one of the first to have the vaccination. But, you know, like everybody else, we're stymied. You know, there's not a lot going on there. So I'm on a wait list.
Okay.
There you go.
But you feel safe with what you're doing.
I wake up every morning and say, okay, I'm good. I'm good. And I try and be very proactive. I hate that word, by the way.
It's a good word at this point. I mean, you have to in this case. So that's, you know what, I got to say, Lori, I mean, that's an interesting thing. Again, staying in small groups, again, finding the alternative. You got to find something.
We use an excellent trainer, by the way, and it's very economical. It's like $10 an hour for each of us.
Fantastic.
So it's cheap and cheerful, but I have, as I said, never been as fit as I am right now. I mean, I can do planks. I can do, you know, full sit-ups up to 25 reps.
Wow. All right, Lori, I'm going to stop because you're making me feel bad. I need to get off my butt and start doing these things. Lori, thank you so much, and continued safety, and continue to exercise and stay in shape. Keisha, you know, you hear all these folks, and I'd imagine you're hearing all kinds of things from your clients as to what they're trying to do. They're getting creative.
They are. And What I push to them all the time is find what motivates you to move, what you're excited to do. For some people, it's running, and they're modifying that the best way they can. If you can get a treadmill, great. In my mind, I'm a Harvard rower. So early in the pandemic, I purchased a rowing machine that I love. But everyone's not going to be able to do that. So if you enjoy dancing, you know, in between Zoom meetings, get up, find your favorite jam, and get up and dance and move a little bit more. And so I think people really just need to get creative. You may not have weights at home, but you might have a big, huge jar or can of something that weighs quite a bit. So there's so many apps and so many videos that are showing people how to get creative in their homes and using your body weight to get moving and to do some exercises and keep your muscles nice and fit. So there's ways to make it happen. I think the most important thing is that you motivate yourself to move and then move more. And the recommendation is at least 150 minutes a week, which is 30 minutes a day during the weekdays, preferably spread out, but not a whole lot to stay physically active and physically fit.
It's very possible, and there are no excuses. Keisha Harrell, Dr. Keisha Harrell, clinical professor and athletic trainer at the University of Miami. Keisha, thanks so much. Stay healthy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, and that's our program for this Thursday, January 7th. Coming up next week on the show, Miami Mayor Francis Suarez will join us. We'll talk about the city's response to the pandemic and the vaccine issue. And if you live in the area, we'd like to hear your questions for the mayor. You can email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. Plus, there's a fight between the state and indigenous communities as formerly preserved wetlands could be opening up to developers. That's a fascinating story. We'll also talk about a fight in a community in Palm Beach County between developers and their neighbors. The developers are building a lake without permission. All of that coming up next week. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a great Friday, a great weekend. Stay safe. We'll talk to you on Monday live.